Justin, what are we doing for the first time ever?
For the first time in all history, an intentional fatherhood retreat is happening.
And it's happening in Costa Mesa, February 19th through 21st. And the coolest part about this is that you're all invited. Every single father and man you know, invite them out. It's going to be a great time. What can people expect?
It is going to be fun.
Yes.
First of all, there's going to be a ton of talks and teaching on spiritual and physical formation and fatherhood.
Sir.
We're going to do curated times to hang out with other dads who are seeking Jesus, just like you are. And honestly, it's just a chance to get away, which is one of the things that is the most important for dads in this stage of life, to get away and reflect on where life is headed and how they're walking with Jesus in it.
Yes. Couldn't have said it better. So join us in Costa Mesa, California, February 19th through 21st, and check out early bird pricing. That's a big deal. It's happening right now. Go to intentionalfatherhood.org to check that all out, or you can check us out on social. But come, we can't wait to see you in February.
We want to meet you in person. Please come.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we give you a strong biblical framework and lots of practical ideas on how to live intentionally as a father and a husband. I'm Brooke Moser.
And I'm Justin Whitmore Early, and we're your hosts to guide you through the many roles and challenges that God is calling you to live intentionally as a father. We're following a visual framework that you can check out at intentionalfatherhood.org, and it's going to help you break down fatherhood into 8 callings.
And in each one, we're going to talk about how God made you to be a father and what practical habits you can start trying today in order to live intentionally into that call.
So come along with us as we follow Jesus on this journey towards being more intentional fathers.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. Today, giving your death away.
Giving your death away.
Giving your death away. We're here, episode 5. Of season 2, Justin, this is already, we've had so many fun conversations, but this has been a true delight. And I am very excited, especially after our time of prep, to get into this topic today for a lot of reasons. A couple housekeeping, but go ahead first.
Well, no, I was just thinking, I'm really excited too, because it's been honestly so helpful to me to talk about the building phase, the giving your life away phase.
Hmm.
I think giving your death away is very provocative, wild, and interesting, as demonstrated by the fact that I was in a coffee shop this morning making some notes on this when a friend walked in and was like, what are you up to today? I was like, actually, we're working on this podcast. And he's like, what's it going to be about? I was like, giving your death away. And he was like, I have some thoughts. And like literally sat down.
Did he give them to you?
Yeah. But I thought it was just so interesting to hear. I mean, we don't think about death enough.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about it a lot. But when men start talking about it, they suddenly feel the weight and the import of life, which is the goal. So that's, but before we get there, too much teaser. We got to do some housekeeping. Some
quick housekeeping, couple things. But well, I'll say this. Thank you for all the questions you sent in. They've already been amazing. Really looking forward to answering season 2 questions, just like we were able to respond to season 1 questions. And thank you for sending them in. We so appreciate it. If you haven't had a chance, all you need to do is record a 1-minute voice memo with your name, where you're from. It's very helpful, by the way. It's so fun to know.
We love hearing your name, where you're from, and the accents. I love the accents from
so many
around the states and around the world.
Both. And all you need to do is email that to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. So please do that if you haven't had a chance, and we would love to hear it. And then the other thing is, obviously, we're going to say it, but please rate, subscribe. That's super helpful. And also leave a comment if you can. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, that is just a super helpful way to engage with this. It gets the word out. And I have to say this to all the ladies listening. First of all, we were having dinner last night with your lovely wife, Lauren, and
yes,
we had a great
so
time.
So fun.
Tried my first oyster.
To show Brooke a true Richmond experience, it was his first oyster, which amazes me how you got to almost age 40 without eating oysters. But
it's never been, you know, you have different experiences in life. It just was one of those that I was never really chasing and just never presented itself. It wasn't like I was against it as much as it just hasn't presented itself.
This is why, you know, this has been an East Coast season.
Absolutely.
We've been talking about Buckies.
Yeah.
You've been in the South. We've been talking about the Confederate monuments that are now no longer on the streets that we've been driving.
Yes.
We've been talking about oysters. So this is
it's
welcome
been a great
to Richmond.
Trip. But the point is, the ladies listening, and I was talking to Lauren as well. I mean, I find it so funny. This is a safe space for you ladies. You can listen to a fatherhood podcast. So I want to highlight this. It's actually very helpful if you do, because it helps you be on the same page. But here's my one ask. I know that a lot of you are like maybe scared to subscribe because you're like, I'm a mom or a wife. I can't do that. Subscribe. It's super great for you to be a part of it.
People really feel this self-consciousness?
Oh, at least some of the women I've talked to.
Really?
Oh, they're like, I listen to that. I'm like, and I just, every time I just try to, I mean, not everyone, but at least probably 3 or 4 to 5 have been like, I listen to it too. I'm like, that's the kindest gift.
Please do.
So ladies, this is your podcast too. Please subscribe as well. But today we want to talk about giving your death away. And this is so pertinent. We're going to obviously speak to fathers because that's our space. We can't speak from who we are not.
Mm-hmm.
But this obviously applies to any mom listening, any wife, any woman listening. This applies to you too. This is a life thing, not just a father thing. We want to talk about it through that lens though. And we want to get to that idea of giving your death away, which is really unique. I think to start today, which would be fun, because this concept is going to be one that we are not fully in. So full caveat for Justin and I. We're both
full caveat. We're not dead yet.
We're not dead. We have not successfully given our deaths away. And we want to just maybe give a big caveat that these are things that we are learning, reading, and attempting to press into. We have not perfected. We are not living in fully. Some of you men listening are 10 years, 20 years, our seniors. You are either doing this or maybe you haven't done this and you're like eager to listen. And I just want to say wherever you're at, what we're going to try to do is have a conversation. Honestly, we're not going to be an authority in this space because we don't believe that we are. But what we want to do is share with you what we're thinking and our attempts.
Yeah. You know, we're trying to prepare for this.
Yes. And trying to think about it. And I think that is actually the most helpful part. So I just, that's all the disclaimer about this one, because this is a stage of life we haven't fully lived, but we're starting to dip our toe in it and figure some of it out. But I think nestled in between your chest hair currently is a necklace.
I have Sicilian roots. There's some chest hair.
But there's you're wearing a necklace.
There's a necklace.
Show the folks this necklace if you
can. It's not going to be visible on camera, but yeah.
Oh, that is.
It's a Memento Mori necklace.
I love that.
Skull, hourglass, and a rose all next to each other.
Yes. Tell us about this. Because this is really where we're going to start today's conversation.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm, to remind everybody, I'm a corporate lawyer rapidly approaching middle age. So wearing a chain with a skull on it is not exactly on brand for me.
That's what I love about you.
However, it was given to me as a gift over 5 years ago now. So I was traveling right after I'd written my first book, The Common Rule.
Hmm.
I was speaking at a church in Michigan. And this pastor named Marvin was so kind to me. He was just unusually hospitable. And really appreciated his church. He's black, multiracial, multi-ethnic congregation, super on fire for the Lord, super orthodox, loved everything that they were doing. And he was just really kind. So he was like having meals with me throughout the weekend.
Okay.
And he made a point to take me out to sushi on the way back to the airport. Drove me. He didn't want me to get an Uber. He wanted to drive me. And he was giving me all this life advice. He was asking the kind of questions he's probably, 20 years ahead of me, right? Yeah. He was just asking those kind of like older man questions. Like, how are you really doing with this new writing and speaking stuff? Like, how's your family? How's your wife? How's your walk with the Lord? How's your purity? Like deep stuff. And he's just so caring. And I finally asked him a question I'd been wanting to ask all weekend. I was like, what is that chain that you wear? What is that necklace? It just looks so cool. What is it? And he took it off, he put it on the table and he pushed it over to me. And he was like, it's a Memento Mori. And I was like, what is a Memento Mori? And he explained there's this ancient Roman Stoic tradition where the generals who had just been paraded through the streets in victory would have a slave or servant behind them who whispered Memento Mori into their ear, which is Latin for remember your death. Mm. And it was this idea that in your high point of life, you would do well to be reminded that you are going to die. You are going to die.
Yes.
This will all come to an end.
Yes.
And I was like, that's so fascinating. And then he told me a little bit about how medieval Christians sort of adopted this tradition into a Christian framework of trying to live in light of the time God has given you to steward on this earth. And we can talk more about what that means. I just thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's amazing. Thank you so much. And I pushed it back to him. He's like, no, I want you to keep it. And he pushes it back across the table.
Oh,
and I'm like,
that's so,
I can't do that. No, I'll go buy one. I'm sure it's like $10 on Amazon. He's like, no, people are usually uncomfortable with grace. They're uncomfortable with gifts. And I want you to accept this gift.
I like
and
this
I
guy.
And I was like, I can't wait
to
this
meet
guy.
Him. I can't wait to meet him.
And so I remember I was like, I honestly tried to give it back like two or three times. Of course you did. It just bears noting in the middle of a little story. Grace is super uncomfortable.
It can be.
Being given a free gift is super uncomfortable. Mm. I was like, I want to earn it. I want to pay for it. No, I want to get my own. He gave it to me. And so I've worn it for 5 years ever since.
Wow.
It's very meaningful to me because I feel like Marvin gave me the gift of remembering my death.
Oh.
Which, go back to the first thing we talked about in this season. Mm. We encouraged you. I hope you've done it. If you haven't, go to the website and download the PDF.
Yes.
Done the age chart.
Mm.
So, you know, I told this little story about filling out the age chart and writing your ages from, like, you know, maybe 20 to 65. And the wild thing about doing the age chart is not just that your time horizon comes into focus, but there's like this funny thing about doing it where you choose to stop somewhere. Like I stopped at 65, you know? And the weird thing is, but you think about it, that like we don't really know how to make this thing because we don't know where it stops.
Yep.
But we all know, though we don't like to think about, it will stop.
Yes.
It will stop.
Mm-hmm.
We all are going to die. Mm. And this is a uncomfortable reality that only, and I want to say this, only Christianity can make sense of.
Mm.
That we long for eternal life.
Yes.
And yet our bodies will die. And yet they will be raised again to resurrected eternal life. Christianity is wild.
It is
a wild claim, but it's the only way to understand your life in light of your impending death.
Mm. I first of all, I love that story. Marvin, I hope to meet you. I hope if somebody listens to this and knows Marvin, will you please send him this end episode and just let him know how he's impacted Justin and therefore, and honestly just encouraged me in deep ways. I have to say one of the things that I know is not even on the topic, but you mentioned it and I think it's important. Unusually generous people will always impact other people.
Mm.
And I want to highlight this as we get to speak in different places, you always remember the places that are just in a very thoughtful way. Like they care for you and like they're hospitable in a way that is hard. Now, it doesn't mean this is not everyone's gift. I totally get it. I'm just saying it's a difference. It makes a difference. I mean, look at the
hospitality
impact.
Makes a huge difference.
I mean, you couldn't have spent more than a day or two with Marvin.
No,
am I correct?
No, it's probably a total of 36 hours.
And we are talking about five plus years later. Anyway, I want to highlight that as just a man thing. Like guys, do not underestimate the power of humility, generosity, hospitality, kindness. It goes so far. They're kingdom principles. They last in your soul. They're more than just a moment. So I wanted to highlight that. Thank you, Marvin, for that example. But as the framework goes, we've talked about getting your life together. Many of us are in the stage of giving our life away. And now we're talking about giving our death away. And I couldn't think of a better place to start than that story. That was so helpful. And I really think what we want to do with this time as well, you know, we kind of gave some caveats. We want to frame this time with how to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some, and I mean, honestly, for a lot of us, this is either a foreign concept or a new concept at best. And it feels a little premature, you know?
I felt this a little bit as we were talking about it. Like, hey, we don't really know how to give our death away. Should we really be thinking? And then I started thinking about memento mori. I was like, actually, wait, this is one of the most meaningful parts of my life now to try to remember it.
Yes.
So we're fumbling, but.
Well, I think just the point being that what our hope is to do, I want to give you hope that there's real, there's some real depth here that I think is good for all of us, including Justin and I. And I'm wanting to highlight this to just simply help frame that there's some ways to think about this. And honestly, ways that need to start now.
Yeah.
You do not become this type of person if you start at 50 and 60 when really you need to be in some of that stage.
Mm-hmm.
It really starts when you are in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s. It can start really at any point.
Yeah.
To put this in your perspective, even if it is further out, is going to be more beneficial for you because it will not take you by surprise.
Yeah.
But if you do not think about it, it will take you by surprise because everyone gets to this place in life, no matter how much you deny.
And just a quick comment on that. This is the wild thing about death. Everybody knows it's coming, and yet everyone is usually pretty surprised when it gets there because we don't really take it seriously that there is a terminal point to our life on earth because we don't do this.
Yes.
We're uncomfortable with. I know some friends who are genuinely afraid to meditate on this, to think about this, to listen to an episode like this. I'm sure some people listening right now are like, I don't want to deal with it. But this is a bold claim of these two episodes, that we do better in life when we take seriously the reality of our impending death, well, and let it frame the way we think about how do we parent now? How do we love our wives now? How do we work now? How do we give now? How do we serve now? How do we steward? Because if there are no limits, then there's nothing really to steward, because things are infinite. But when things are time bound, you only have this much money. We only have this much time. You only have this many years with your kids.
That's really good.
Suddenly you're thinking about stewardship. Oh, I don't have forever.
Yes.
How shall I use this then?
There's so much there. I love, so helpful with what you just said. Two things that come to mind, or the first thing that comes to mind rather, is this is a classic question. I've heard it many different times, but someone comes up to someone on the street and says, "Hey, you want a $10 million?" And he's like, yeah, I do. And he goes, "Okay, I'll give you $10 million and you have to use it in 24 hours. But at the end of those 24 hours, you die." "Do you still want the $10 million? Like, no." He's like, so the idea is, so you're telling me that waking up tomorrow morning is worth $10 million to you?
I like it.
It's manipulation. I love it. So why don't you treat your day and treat each morning as like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I got this day, right? Yeah. Perspective is the idea. Life is super valuable. And I think you're absolutely right that you have to start that process, because it absolutely does. It helps you value what is important. And
right.
So what we want to do is give some framework. We're going to give a lot of practicals on this one too. And even how we are trying to, in a big word, instill legacy into our families. Again, attempting, it's a process. We haven't even fully gotten there yet. But here's some of the things we're trying to do. And for you, we would just encourage you listening, begin to think this way. And I think the power here isn't in necessarily adjusting your whole life immediately to begin to actively think of death all the time. Maybe for some that will be helpful. But for a lot of you, it's just going to be getting comfortable with this idea that death is going to be here eventually, and that you have an obligation, responsibility to pass on your life. Mm-hmm. And there's a beauty in that. And as much as that can be scary if you don't think about it, it's actually not scary when you are walking in faith with Jesus. I mean, there's so much beauty in it. And so some framework. I want to give you a book that has been really helpful for me. I know you've read some of it.
Yeah. I've only skimmed it, to be honest, but so many of my friends have read and recommend Arthur Brooks's
Strength to Strength. This is the book. This is just a really helpful tool. So if you're like, you want to know more about this, we're going to use some of, maybe some of his wording or a little bit of his framework, because I think he probably does some of the best of simplifying a very complicated idea. But that's a great book. So that'll be in the show notes. Go get that. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful resource. But one of the things he talks about that has been just helpful framework for me to think through, and I know we've talked about it, but he has this framework about basically youth and later in life. And in our youth, we often have this idea of fluid intelligence. So he uses these two terms, fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence. And fluid intelligence essentially is that creative, innovative achievement part of us. That's a lot of what we're doing in getting our life together and giving our life away.
Yeah, this is the stage that we have been talking about and been in. Most of us are trying, I just think about my job right now.
Yes.
How do I write this contract? How do I close this deal?
Mm-hmm.
How do I draft this book? How do we do this podcast?
Yeah.
We are building skills that are very specific to our craft, our trade, which is great. That's a lot of getting your life together.
Yes.
And it's a lot of giving your life away.
Mm, absolutely.
However.
And you need that fluid intelligence. That's a big part of your life. But later in life, we need crystallized intelligence. It needs to move from that fluid state to more of a crystallized, hardened state. And that's wisdom. That's teaching. That's synthesizing your life and being specific about it. And this is really the bulk of giving your death away. This is where that starts. And that process is really, we're talking about that actively, about moving from fluid to crystallized. But one of the quotes that just helped me in a deep way with this is, it's actually from this book. I'll just read it really quick. If we spend our lives addicted to the skills that fade, so we're addicted to those skills, maybe you're in the middle of that in your career right now, those skills that fade, we will end in decline. If we shift to the strengths that grow, we will move from strength to strength. Mm. The title of the book.
That's a great quote.
And it's just helpful. If we live our lives addicted to the skills that will fade, all of us are doing things right now at a skill-based level. If you are a man working, most of those skills will fade. Mm-hmm. Most of them. And I mean, honestly, I couldn't think of a more humbling thing than losing skills over time, right? Yeah. It's a humbling process. Yeah. Aging is a humbling process. And it's a scary thing. I didn't tell you about this, and I'm sure he'll be okay with me sharing it, but we were on a hike. I was on a hike with my father-in-law, Phil, and we were up at Lake Tahoe. And I mean, he is a strong dude. He's 75. He's had two knee replacements, but he's like,
hiking at 75 after two knee replacements?
Well, not anymore, but.
All right, still, I'm impressed, Phil.
Yeah, I'm impressed. But I mean, honestly, a very scary situation. I mean, this terrain was like gnarly for me, for my kids, for anybody. And I was we're like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I'm good. And honestly, he was. He did a great job. But he was walking and he just barely hit this little rock. And he fell and landed in a patch of rocks.
Oh, man.
And he hit his chest. So he breaks three ribs, broke his arm, and slashed his hand open. 9 stitches.
Oh, man. And on family vacation.
On family vacation. And Matthew, so youngest brother, and I, we're there. And, you know, in that moment.
Did you have to carry him out?
So let me.
Let me get to the story.
You're ruining it. No, I want to highlight this because this is actually a really great reminder. So I hear my kids, Dad, Pops fell, please come, you know? And, you know, I've talked to Phil, like he was kind of embarrassed. I was like, embarrassed? What are you talking about? This is like anybody could do. This is terrain. Anybody could have fallen, myself included. But Matthew and I were there and we saw him, and Matt was there before I was. And it was amazing to see how strong he was. And he was just like, I got a little cut. I'm fine. Like, I'll be okay. And I'm sitting there looking at it like, I think you're in shock. And I think you're going to bleed out if we don't stop that hand thing right now. You know, it was pretty intense. And we basically, we wanted to see if he could walk. Like, okay, let's stand you up very slowly. Let's see if you can walk. His legs were fine and not impacted. And so we're like, okay, we're going to see if you can walk. If you can, and it's not, you know, causing pain, discomfort, or, you know, potential more injury, then we won't, you know, life flight you out of here. We would like to not do that, but we'll, whatever we need. And so Matthew and I, one shoulder, you know, I under one, him under another, took the very long mile walk down with him. And highlighting that story to say, A, Phil's really tough. He's very strong. He's doing great. He's doing great. It was so scary. It was so scary because of the brevity of life. In that moment, I realized like life could have been gone like that. And aging is humbling. Mm-hmm. In conversation afterwards, he was sharing like, that was a really humbling experience. I was really honored that he'd share that with me. And at the same time, I had a hard time figuring that out. I was like, why is this humbling? You fell. Anybody can fall, you know?
I see that though.
Yeah. So, and then after.
Everybody knows I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
When you're older, you fall, you wonder, is this the last time I'll hike?
Yes. And for him, it is the last time he's going to go on any hike like that, right? Yeah. Like that chapter's over for his life. And it was a great conversation to actually realize the perspective, and for him to even go like, my life is different now. And it's not radically different as much as it's like that one thing I'm not going to be doing anymore.
Yeah, those are.
But it is humbling. I want to say that to actually say like, after upon thinking, I realized, no, that is humbling.
Yeah.
It is a humbling situation.
I think it's moments like that.
Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode.
That do us so much good. Right?
Yes.
Because
painfully,
the way that we are now disconnected from death, unfortunately, you know, many of our parents will die off in nursing homes where we don't do the care. We're not close to it. We're not seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're protected in an unhealthy way from it. So we don't think about it enough.
Yes.
And when moments like that, I mean, most of human history, people living before us, we're seeing people die all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So they were surrounded by the reality that, oh, life can be snatched away at any minute.
Mm-hmm.
My loved ones will die. I will die. My loved ones will watch me die. So how do I live in light of that? Right. So, this is the whole idea of giving your death away.
Yes.
To live in light of the fact that you will not always be here. So how do you live a generative life that handles that final stage well, especially knowing you don't know when it's going to come? And I love the fluid intelligence, crystallized intelligence bit that Brooks shares, because it helps me think of, there's a set of things now that I just want to teach my kids, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're doing a lot of knot tying on our camping, just trying to teach them like basic knots.
Yeah.
They're sitting on the couch two nights ago while I'm working on a loan amortization table for one of my clients, like in one of the deals we're closing. And they're like, what is an amortization? They're trying to read the word. And I'm like, it's a loan schedule. And you have to put it together in Excel to figure out how to pay down a debt, so everybody knows when the payments will due and when it's going to be done. And they're like, how do you do that? I'm like, well, I could sort of explain. You're not going to understand. But also I'm thinking, ChatGPT is going to do this for you. By the time that it's already pretty good at it. Like, you need to check its work. Like that's part of fluid intelligence.
Yeah, yep.
But they're like, there are skills I know how to teach you. And there's a lot of pleasure in that. There's a lot of value in teaching your kids literally how to do things.
Yeah.
But when I think about giving my death away, I think about, I want to teach them the value of work more than how to do an amortization table. I want to teach them, like, how do you negotiate with people? Because this is what people are like, more than I want to teach them literally how to close a deal. Or I want to teach them why write rather than, well, here's the grammar of a sentence. I mean, I think all of these things are important, right? And this doesn't minimize fluid intelligence at all. Like, we spend a lot of our life trying to master our craft, and it's so good. So good.
Yes.
But totally agree. There's a part of our life, and this is, I think, what guys are talking about when they talk about legacy. Or as Jonto said, legacy.
Legacy.
I love it. We love it, Jonto.
Jonto.
This is what guys are thinking about when they're thinking about, what do I pass on to my kids?
Yeah.
It's that realm of crystallized intelligence, which presumes that we're working on it.
Yeah.
That we're thinking about it. Yes. That we're thinking about, what are the life lessons?
Yes.
What is that, like, old man dad advice that we want to gather together and pass on? What we're saying, right, is now is the time to start thinking about that. Not because you are the wise old man yet. Hopefully we'll all be holy fools one day, really wise. But now's the time to start practicing.
Yeah.
Now's the time to start thinking about death and how it reframes.
Well, if you don't do it now, you'll be caught off guard later. We know countless people who have not taken the time in their 30s and 40s to think about it, to do the work, and they're paying the consequences. Actually, they're not. Their families are.
Well, yeah. And part of the consequence, right, is that we don't... You shared a psalm on this. We don't produce fruit.
I was going to say,
we start to wither.
Literally, yeah. So Psalm 92, the righteous flourish like a palm tree. They still bear fruit in old age. So the righteous, when you're righteous, you, like, the byproduct of that, the side effect, dare I say, is actually flourishing, and you still bear fruit in your old age. We've all met those people who are, as you get older, there's only two types of people: old, mean, and grumpy, or kind, generative, loving, patient, full of joy.
So what you're talking about the other day, you said mellow.
Yeah, mellow, but not in a negative way. Yeah,
mellow, but you were like, there's a mellowness in their spirit that's like...
It's like a tamed, like, their the parts of their story and their shadow side and their ego, it's been tamed in a way by the spirit that is just refreshing.
They're now comfortable with life.
Yeah,
they can
rejoice in you.
Yes.
Because they're comfortable in themselves. And man, can I say this? If you're not comfortable in your own skin, you can never rejoice with someone else's success.
Yes, Brooke. Okay.
You talk about it. Let's
Here's
go.
A way to think about this now. Because I feel very challenged by this in a good way. We all know what it's like for older people to feel threatened by our success.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably in our generation, there's a significant amount of frustration. You read about this of boomers not really handing over the reins. I mean, we see this in politics. Like, I think the record oldest ages of presidential candidates. You know, and
absolutely.
There's, you know, we could talk about this in all areas of life, but I think one thing that men have struggled with in our time is learning how to hand things over. And part of maturity when you see an old man who's doing well is they don't feel threatened by your success. They feel happy about it.
They're happy for you.
Right? And this is something for us to think about, right? Yes. So you think about, you know, you're almost 40, I'm 40.
Yeah.
When we see a 30-year-old waltz into the law scene or the podcasting scene or the writing scene and they're doing great, like, what do we feel like? I want to help this person. This is great. Oh, I'm so happy for them. This is like me. Or do we feel like, slow down, dude? Like, no. This is
still your role. You
not
don't
your
know.
Time yet. You know, that is the difference, I think, between somebody who is learning and recognizing that they will need to give their death away, that they need to focus on calling other people forward, because it means they're actually comfortable, like you said, in their own skin. They're comfortable with what God is doing in their life.
Yes.
So they don't need to feel threatened by other people. Yes. And this might be horizontally. This might be your actual coworkers.
Yeah, peers.
But it might be the young.
Yes.
It could be anybody. But I think a mark of maturity is when we start to get comfortable with what God is doing in our life so that we can rejoice in other people's successes, not try to belittle them or minimize their success in order to preserve ours.
Yeah. And I mean, truly, there's nothing more distasteful than basically subtle forms of pride that just leak out in name dropping. And here's what I know and who I know. Like, honestly, got to be honest, nobody really does care.
No one cares.
Actually,
and it always sounds bad. Like, there's always, no way for it to not sound bad.
And maybe no one's told you this, so I'll just tell you, stop doing it.
Yeah, it's
so obnoxious. I know that you know cooler people than I do. That's awesome. And that is not the metric of success in my life. So stop making your metric of success my metric of success, right? Like, that's what happens. Like, do you know who, like, this person, I was in the room with that person. Great. Did anything happen because of that? I lived in LA for a good amount of time. And I saw so many actors and actresses that I loved. You go to a restaurant, we lived in downtown, or we lived in Hollywood, Los Feliz area, which is like just a mecca for anybody that's in the film industry and TV industry. I saw BJ Novak, who's like on The Office, Ryan on The Office. I love him. I love The Office. And I saw him in a restaurant. And my first thought was, what the heck am I going to say to him? And the second thought was, why would he care? I was at a restaurant, Kristen Wiig and Fred Armisen, two of my favorite people in the world, SNL. I love SNL. Sitting on a table, two tables away. I mean, just, I'm frothing. I'm like, I can't believe this. Who am I going to tell? Nobody, because nobody really cares. And am I going to talk to them? Probably not. You know why? Because they don't care. They are in the middle of a conversation. Other than me getting a photo and trying to tell people out of my own insecurity that I met this person, which doesn't add value to who I am, what do we care? So I think it's an important thing to, I know I'm being kind of tongue in cheek with this, but the point really is we do so much damage by not checking ourselves in this area and not saying, okay, what has God called me to do? Yeah. What is my life? How do I give my death away? And I want to remind everybody that we're listening, you know, we're going to get practical with this, but we have to set up this framework because I think for some of us, it's just very foreign. And the older generation, I mean, we have so much, when you get older, you have so much authority and power that you do not even always understand to be able to give and bless the younger generation.
Oh, okay. Can you talk about blessing for a second?
Oh,
I would because love to. I think you said a word that's like, it sparks in me. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But I have not always thought about the power of blessing.
Yes.
Say what you mean by bless the younger generation.
There is a biblical framework for blessing. And in the Bible, blessing was not just words. It was not just a physical touch. It was like, it was an embodiment and a moment of, with your physicality, with your words, with your whole life, in some way imparting that to another person. There's a five eightfold biblical framework for a blessing.
So
I'd like to go through it.
We've done it. Here we are. We're in the practical part of this episode.
Practical part.
So point number one, learn to bless. Explain it, bro.
So bless. So there's a fivefold way. So first is appropriate touch. Second is a spoken message. Third is attaching high value. Fourth is picturing a special future. And fifth is a commitment to fulfill the blessing. So I want to walk through that really quick.
That's amazing.
So this is all biblical. I'm not making this up. And what's cool about this is think about this with your kids. And then think about this when you have adult kids. When I think of my son, Duke, if I go on a trip, and often like I'm traveling, so I don't do this with my kids every time, but I try to. I will often go up to my son, Duke, and I'll first appropriate touch. I put my hands on his shoulders and I look him in the eyes. There's a physicality to it. And I look at him and I say, that's the first part.
This part is enormously important, by the way.
It's enormously,
enormously important.
So there's a physicality, get his attention. I'm locking on eyes.
Yes.
He's taller than me now. And so he calls me his short king. I don't like this, by the way. I don't like it.
I like that.
I know you do.
I don't want Whit to call me that, even though he's taller than me now.
Your son's taller than you. I was hanging with him.
What's wrong with us?
I don't
know. Both of our sons make it over 6 foot and we're
perfect size. Actually, you know what we are? We are.
I'm 5'10". I'd really like to be 6 foot.
No, but think about this. The moment you're 6 foot, everything else just becomes a little more challenging. You are at the size where flights, cars, houses, they fit who you are.
I'd still take it.
Yeah. Okay. Just get some bigger shoes, bro. Anyway, I think so. There's appropriate touch. And then there's a spoken message. And something like that might look like, hey, son, I love you. You belong in this family. I appreciate who you are. You're my good friend. And it's the idea of like just speaking what you think about them often. I just appreciate you. You're a good man. Then there's picturing a special future. And this is that idea, attaching high value. This is where you like are really trying to help them see themselves in something bigger mm-hmm. than themselves. So for example, I said this a while ago, it made me laugh. I said, you know, son, and this was genuine, but I said, hey, son, you remind me of like Jesus and John Wick. You're like so godly, but you're not violent, but you're like really tough at the same time. I just like really appreciate that like intensity. I love that. And he's like, yeah, that's cool. Like, so I see you. I just don't kill anyone with a pencil. Right?
I love that.
And then, you know, there's picturing a special future. And what I love about this one is this is the prophetic part of knowing somebody. This is the prophetic part of doing relationship with people over the long haul.
Yes.
That you can have a curiosity in the spirit based upon knowing who they actually are of what they could become.
Yes.
And you speak that. So
yes.
Let me just give a picture of this. When I get to this part with my daughter, Birdie, she's 9 years old now, but when I get to this part, often I'll tell her, I love you. I'll get to this part and I'll picture the special future by saying, hey, I remember there was a time when I was on a prayer walk when you were really little and God gave me this vision. I'll never forget it of God using your mind to change the world, to bring his kingdom to the world in a beautiful way. And this was a real vision. Now,
we got to talk about at some point, I'm just bookmarking for future seasons, visions and visions with our children. Because I have some dreams that have been really significant about kids.
Okay, so this is
just bookmarking. No, everybody get excited.
Excited. I can't, yeah. I'm excited.
Because I didn't know you had that vision. So, but you told her the picture.
I told her I had this vision. Yeah. Now that sounds a little benign and almost like, that's pretty basic. And I would argue if you didn't know Birdie's story, that would sound pretty basic. But if you knew Birdie's story, you'd know at 6 months, she had a catastrophic form of epilepsy called infantile spasms that caused long-term permanent brain damage. So for God to give me a vision that the most broken part of her would be the thing that he uses the most for his kingdom and his glory is not minor. It's not mild. It is a miracle. It's literally God gave me a vision of a miracle that he could do with her brain. We never knew if she would be able to read, speak, and all of these things. She's developed these skills. She now is like the most avid reader. She wakes up early with me when I go out to the porch and I'm reading, like I've talked in other episodes. And she has books and she sits there with her blanket and she reads. She doesn't want to talk. And she just reads.
Man, that is so beautiful.
And I'm telling you, that picture was divine. And when I tell her that I think that God's going to use the part that was most broken in you to do the most good in the world, it helps her. I mean, like she doesn't even fully understand it, but it changes her.
Oh man.
The last part, commitment to fulfill the blessing. There's nothing worse than somebody who says a lot of nice stuff but never does anything about it.
Mm.
And if you told one of your kids, like, you know, you told Whit, you're great at drums. Like, you're really naturally good, but you never gave him a drum set to actually practice on. Yeah. You're undermining your own blessing as a practical example.
That's a great point.
But when you think about what you're doing, a blessing is giving word, attention, prophetic thought and prayer, and commitment of time, energy, and money to make something happen. Yeah. So when we say bless, what we mean by bless is that. And when we ask an older generation, and if you are older and you're listening to this, please do this with everybody around you that's younger. When we say blessed, that's what we mean. And I want to highlight this as well. If this is something you either never got, never have thought of, never do, I want to remind you, you can do this right now.
Yes.
Do this with your friends.
Yes.
Do this with your spouse.
This is how you turn generations. Yes. If, you know, people who were blessed are blessed in order to bless. And that's wonderful. But you might have been the product of a broken generation. Yes.
I didn't have
but
that growing
you
up.
Can, yeah, look at you, man.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, like with your stories of your dad and all this stuff, and here you are blessing Birdie, blessing Duke. I mean, it's incredible.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
It's incredible.
It's what's been so helpful to me is you can take this same blessing formula, for lack of a better term, and apply it to any of your close relationships. What spouse is going to hate this? First appropriate touch. Well, you're married. Maybe it's inappropriate touch. You know, that's okay. That's all right.
Spouse, I can go out the window.
Actually, it can be completely inappropriate as long as she's game. But you know, like, you're going to take time and energy to think through how you could bless her and what you think of her and how much she means to you. And then you're going to say, I'm going to commit my life and my energy to make sure that that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the life that we need. And men, can I just say, your friends need this. You think about this. Just say it. Like, can I just say it?
Yes.
Freaking say it.
Yes.
Like, I think good stuff about people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I try to say it as much as I can, but I don't even say all the good that I actually think, right?
Yeah.
And I have a real, like, rooted desire to do this. And I still don't say as much as I could.
That's why I got so excited when you said bless, because this is it's such a helpful framework for people. So, I do this with my kids. This was, this is actually what got me started in thinking on habits of the household stuff.
Yes.
Cause we started with a nightly blessing.
Yes.
So there are three that I do with my children now. And I think it's helpful to think this is possible in the littlest years and you're starting legacy by saying similar prayers over and over.
Mm-hmm.
This is also like your examples, you know, with Duke, for example, in the older years, I think this is true in marriage and all this stuff, but with the little kids,
I love these.
Yeah, I often say, can you see my eyes?
Yeah.
And they say yes. And then I say, can you see that I see your eyes? And they say yes. And that's the physical embodiment thing, right? It's like the let's get attention. And then it's just, you know that I love you. Yes. You know I love you no matter what bad things you do. Yes. You know I love you no matter what good things you do. Yes. Who else loves you like that? Who else loves you no matter what good or bad things you do? And they say, God does. And then rest in that love. And that I like that one. It's just become one of our traditions. But I also think all blessing in some way is a restatement of the gospel message. You said it perfectly. God is going to take the most broken part of you and make it the most beautiful part of what you offer the world.
Yes.
And that idea that despite our bad things and without regard to our good things, God loves us and is going to make something of us.
Yes.
That's a little kid way of saying the best news there is in the world.
Yes, sir.
We do it with our kids and their bodies. We do a blessing where we touch every part of their bodies and say, Lord, bless. And by the way, kids love embodied stuff, right? They love head, shoulders, knees, and toes stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We say, Lord, bless their feet. May they bring good news. Bless their legs. May they carry on in times of trouble. Bless this boy's back, may he be strong enough to bear the burdens of others. Bless his arms to hold the lonely. Bless his hands to do good work. Bless his neck, would you turn his head to the poor?
Wow.
Bless his ears to discern truth, his eyes to see beauty, and his mouth to speak encouragement. Bless his mind, may he grow wise in the knowledge of you. And then we end with, but above all, Lord, bless his heart. May he come to love you and all that you've made in the right order. And
that's so good. Let's write that down in the show notes, guys.
Yeah, put it in. This is
so good.
This is, I put it on a PDF and give it out to people. We'll put it in the show notes. But little things like that.
It's such a
good thing. You can think of little blessings that can become traditions in your family.
Yes, yes.
But the simplest one is when you look your son in the eye and say, son, I'm proud of you. Mm-hmm. And I'll always stick with you. Mm-hmm. Or daughter, I love you. You're beautiful to me. You're beautiful mm-hmm. to the world. Mm-hmm. And I will always cherish you. Many forms of, but these are blessings, you know? And I love what you added, because I've actually never heard that fivefold framework for it.
Yeah.
Really, really appreciate the fifth point of
commitment,
committing to it. Because nobody, the worst thing in the world is hearing a parent's words and knowing that it's not actually the way they live. Mm. Like hearing an apology and knowing they're just going to do it again. Mm. Or hearing a, I love you, and knowing this dad is actually going to leave me.
Wow.
But when our blessing is made true by our life lived out for them.
Yes.
We do an incredible thing. So do this to your kids. Do this to friends, coworkers, our friends. We call our group of friends the cast. When we're on cast getaway weekends, there's a form of this where, like, you know, so after somebody shares somebody will go over, put their hand on their shoulder after praying for them and say, you are going to be a blessing to the world because of what the Lord is putting you through. I know this is trial to you, but this is going to be a gift to everybody else. That sort of like friend to friend, shoulder to shoulder, speaking life.
Yes.
So bless people, bless people.
And this stage is going to require you to detach from your ego, from your status, from your achievement. And I have to be honest, I'm so uncomfortable with all those words. Like, I don't want to detach from those things.
Yeah.
Those are all comforting.
Yeah.
That, like, I feel good in my own ego. I feel good in when, if my status, you know, whatever that means or wherever that is, like, we like more status in general. We like achievement. We like to be remembered. But the fact is, they're in this stage. We need to start beginning to detach and say, this isn't about what I've accomplished and I've achieved. And again, we are thinking about this. We're also in the very unique space where we're also in both. We're still building a lot of our lives. Mm-hmm. And I know many men listening, you are building your life still. So keep building, but have this right next to your building.
Yeah.
You have that idea of like, I am in fluid intelligence, but I've got to move to that crystallized intelligence at some point. And it's going to be sooner than you think. What everyone says that I've talked to and also read on in this is it feels way sooner than you think it should be. And it doesn't ever feel, you're like, wait, you're already, you know?
Yeah.
But I also think if you step into it and can begin to make it a part of your life, your rhythm, your routine, giving your death away becomes a massive gift to everyone that you love most and really the world. And because we're talking about speaking life, you know, we were talking earlier, Justin, you had said there's some stuff, you know, talking about the idea of like, we want to have, you know, we want to invest in relationships over achievement, right? Mm-hmm. We want to mentor and teach what we know.
Yep.
And I think it's really important. You don't want to wait until you're old and wise to start sharing what you've already learned.
Yeah.
It's actually in this process. So let me give you a practical example, and then I want you to share this story, but essentially a story or maybe the point, but essentially, like, what are you and I doing right now? We are just talking very honestly about, here's the stuff that we have learned, and here's what has been really hard. Here's what's been good. Here's what's helped us. Here's where we've failed miserably.
Yeah.
We are not experts in this space, but we are practitioners. And all we're trying to do is, to anyone that is in the stage around us, and if you are in a different stage above us or below us, we're just simply trying to say, here's what we're doing. Yeah. We're trying to simply do that. We're trying to teach what we know. We don't know it all. We know that we don't. But anyway, this is just one example of that.
We're talking about mentorship, right?
Yeah.
Like we're basically, there's a lot of names for it. But
yes, you know, mentorship.
If bless is your first practice, mentor others, disciple others is your second one. And so I have ideas here, but I also have self-consciousness here because
hit me.
This whole season of giving your death away is like, well, I'm kind of in the give your life away years. So I'm not really ready for this. I feel kind of guilty about this stuff because I, for example, I've discipled two people in the past 3 or 4 years, both just for like about a year season.
Okay.
That feels inadequate to me. I wish I've done more.
Hmm.
For like 2 years, I've been longing to start a men's breakfast here in Richmond, where it's just like talking to younger guys about their career. And by the way, there's no shortage of men's breakfasts in Richmond, but I've just wanted to be like, come to my office. I'll talk to you about what it's been like for me to build a family in my career in these years and just sort of like invite younger guys in to disciple. And I just haven't made time for it. Mm. I feel a lot of the insecurity of, I want to mentor, I want to disciple. It's like sort of, most of my time is spent with my children now. And I'm like, I guess that's okay.
Oh, it's absolutely
like, I mean, they're
okay.
My main disciples. Yeah. So like that,
you got to get that right before you can get
it. But I feel like, I feel a bit inadequate about this at work. I wish I was a better mentor to my associates, my colleagues. I just think this is hard.
Well, let me highlight, can I highlight something to you? And I said this to you in private and I'll say it to you in public because I would say it in both ways is it's really interesting to me because on the idea of blessed and being honest, I'm going to be honest with you in this space, blessing and honesty.
Wait, can I get appropriate touch first? Or?
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah. Can you pick where?
That was a little bit, yeah. You get to,
dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice. Appropriate touch.
You get to decide.
I'm going to save that one. That's good.
Yeah. Do that with your friends.
Okay. I got uncomfortable because you were about to say something meaningful. So I had to like,
I know how it goes. It's okay. That said though, I think it's important to realize for anyone that's hearing you, myself included, you feel the nudge, and I think it's probably a nudge of the spirit in a beautiful way to begin to mentor those 30, 40, 50 people. I mean, maybe it's 10, because that's something God's doing in your life right now. And it's almost like you feel guilty that you haven't started it. At least this is what I'm picking up.
No, I do. I feel like,
and you kind of,
I feel a little bit embarrassed to talk about ideas on this because I'm like, I haven't done much.
So let me say this though. I was quick to say something to you that I believe is truth and you're just going to have to receive it. And this is friendship and this is just what it looks like. Because you're too close to your calling, it's hard to see the fruit of it all the time. And honestly, I think one of the best gifts that God protects us from is seeing the full fruit of all that he's doing through our lives.
Oh.
And I think that's a gift. And here's why.
Oh, interesting.
Because if we saw the extent of the fruit of our lives, we would quickly become undone by it. And I think it would ruin a lot of us and it would quickly mess with our ego. And I don't think many of us have the character, myself included, to see the full fruit of our lives.
Wow.
That said, I don't think that you
didn't say that earlier. That's really provocative though.
Well, thank you.
I'm hearing this. I just wanted everybody to know I'm hearing this for the first time. That's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
That said though, I really, really want to highlight you are doing this. You have written incredible books. Like, I don't like many books and I don't usually read friends' books because they usually are not great. Mm. That's no offense. And if you're my friend, I'm just being honest. This is very, because they're not. And you have written really good books because you have a gift of it. God's anointed you. You've been thoughtful. You've done the work. It's craft. It's this whole package of stuff. And what feels so funny to me, and probably just some listening, but what I said to you, and I was very honest, is for you to get distracted by the 20 or 30 you haven't met with in person and to negate the hundreds of thousands, if not more, who have been impacted by your thoughtful processing of how God works in your life is just, it's not only just a little silly, it's just important to remember God is always going to be calling us to something new and we need to be obedient in that, but we should never, ever, ever think that that negates because we haven't stepped into the 20 or 30. That you haven't already been doing this in a huge way. Mm. So I know you just said, I don't know, I'm not really doing this. I would disagree with you on every way. I think that you are mentoring people and families in ways that are hard to articulate. I think you're gifted. I think you're humble. My favorite thing about you when we first met was like, this guy doesn't read his own mail. He doesn't give a rip. That was my favorite thing. And that was honestly, I think what has drawn a lot of our friendship is that I don't think that you care too much about Justin Whitmell Early in the sense of what he's accomplishing. I think you're really present and you care for people. You have amazing integrity. You have friends around you that keep you grounded. Your family's amazing and they're just as real as my family. They're just as crazy as my family in the best way.
You
right?
were there when the little one put a hole in the wall last night.
A whole foot through the wall.
Another hole
my
in the wall.
My favorite moment.
One night at my house and you got to see somebody put a hole in the wall.
I loved it.
Why do they keep breaking my house? I'm doing it again. No. I'm lightening the moment because that was, thank you. Thank you. That was very, very encouraging. And
yeah,
I think you're right. I do think a lot, I guess, now that you made me think of it, I do think a lot about legacy in written words. This is why I want to write. You know, I love writing contracts. I love negotiating deals. I love reading. So I always love words, but there's a reason I want to write books. And it's the same reason I want to write letters to my children, because writing down words, talking about words here, right? Like blessings.
Yeah.
They're written powerful. Words, mentorship. We're basically doing that Genesis 2 thing that we talked about two episodes ago. God speaks the world into existence. We speak and we also shape reality. Our words have incredible power. And I'm thankful that you reminded me of what I do actually feel like is my call. And that is that I want to shape and mentor and change and disciple other people by leaving them words, my kids included.
Yes.
With letters and words to them, but also in books. And so I appreciate that. I still want to start that men's breakfast, but I think that
it's yes. And it's not, this doesn't mean anything because I haven't done this. I think that is a nudge of the spirit, just like the nudge of the spirit to write books. And I think this is just a really good example. Men, if you're listening, anyone that's listening, to remember, I think that we need other people in our lives to see our lives clearly. We really do. We have to have people in our lives that can call out what we can't see, because there's no way that you can see the full 360 of your life. You can't.
Yes.
And you need other people to say, actually, yes, or no. And not at a place of, you know, there's only deep respect and love for you. But I would never, because I love you, I'm going to be honest with you. I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong about that. I think that you are way more impactful than you have any idea.
Thank you. You're so right about this. And this is so relevant to the whole idea of mentorship and giving your death away. And that is that we tend to measure our lives now in the accomplishments, right? In the success and what we're building. But when you think about crystallized intelligence, wisdom, the things that you want to give, these are the things that are formed in relationship, right? Yeah. And so we have I think about this a lot, because right after Habits of the Household, I wrote Made for People, and people are so interested in how to parent.
Sure.
Like, they know they need help.
All of us.
People long to think about friendship, but they're always like, I'll do that later.
Yep.
And I think a huge curse of the human condition is we think, I'll get to relationships later. But relationships are what we need to learn how to give our death away, right? Because as was just demonstrated, and I'm seriously so thankful for those words, we don't see ourselves clearly. Mm-hmm. We don't really know how to pass it on unless we have mentors or just friends in our life.
Yeah.
And that means right now starting patterns of like scheduling friendship, right? Like leaning into, right? Do you agree?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Like scheduling friendship. I mean, we use the excuse of this podcast to hang out. I mean, don't tell our wives.
This is girls, one good way to do it.
Girls do not. I mean, it fast tracks friendships. We sit in rooms for hours on end, having the deepest conversations for at least 4 to 5 hours in a day. It really does, you know, fast track a friendship. So find an excuse. But I mean, with my close friends, just like you, you know, it has to be scheduled or it doesn't happen. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
But secondly, I think that if you don't take the time to prioritize this, your wife's going to give you the best mirror of who you really are. But your friends are going to help you see what you're actually doing. They're going to give you another layer that you need. And honestly, I think that if you don't have a full community of people giving you feedback and you giving them feedback, there's going to just be big misses.
Yes.
And if you don't have the humility or the awareness or the framework to have that kind of feedback loop, you're going to always be offended. You're going to always be arrogant. You're always going to be insecure. And men, you don't want to be that. I know you don't, but we are that until we deal with that. And I think that if you don't deal with it, you are going to be in a space where you're stuck, where you are honestly causing a lot of hurt to those around you.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I can speak to all of this so casually and confidently is because this has been so much a part of my own life and story.
Like, yes.
I've had to learn all of this stuff and I'm still learning.
Yep.
Like, and praise God, I'm still learning. I want to keep learning. But man, there are so many things that want to jump on to use the lack of the better term, but that want to jump on the throne of my heart and replace God, even the good things. I mean, I so quickly will replace ministry with God, opportunities with God, invitations with God instead of God. And I have to, with all of them, just look at them and go, these are not what make me. These are not what give me life. These are not what will sustain me. If I idolize these, I'll lose everything. Like, I actively have to do this all the time still. And I think that you and I, Justin, I mean, we can speak for ourselves, but it is the way to life, and it is only through death. Mm-hmm. Jesus said it over and over and over.
Amen.
And so we're going to get very practical in the next episode talking about legacy and how we pass this on to our kids. But this is just framework, right? This is the first part of giving your death away. I know we talked about a lot. My prayer right now is that the Spirit would give you whatever, and I'll just pray this now, Holy Spirit, whatever is of you in this moment, on this episode, would you just highlight it in the hearts of men and women listening? Would you be like a flashlight in the cave of the souls of people? Just like literally that imagery of a dark cave, it's completely pitch black, and then there's a flashlight and you can see everything clearly. Would you take a flashlight and highlight the thing that needs to be focused on from this conversation? And we ask that you do it for your power and your glory. And so I think this is,
amen, brother.
This is what we have to live into, right?
Yeah. Like,
and it's not easy, and we need the Spirit's help. But I also am so confident that because God's in charge, we don't have to be. The Lord's my shepherd; I lack nothing. I shall not want. In the NIV, I lack nothing. You don't lack anything because you have a shepherd. Yeah. And he's in charge.
Yes.
So whatever your stress is today, whatever your worry is today, if I'm not enough, I'm not doing enough for my kids, I'm not being the good enough dad, give all that to him. Mm. Let him hold it for you and let him help you.
I want to give people four ideas.
Love it.
Four practical ideas to try before our next episode to get started on thinking about this, okay?
Good idea. Yes. Go.
These are going to be brief. One, buy yourself a memento mori. Think about it. Order a little trinket off Amazon or buy something or put something on your desk that reminds you that you're going to die.
Mm.
Put it somewhere visible. I like to wear mine. If I'm not wearing it, I carry it in my pocket. Consider just having some tangible token in your life that reminds you that you're going to die. Number two, I know a lot of people have done this. Write your obituary.
Oh, dude, I've done that.
You've done it?
Yes.
Okay, I've actually never done it.
It's incredibly interesting.
Right. Some people write their obituary. Some people write a letter they want to be read at their funeral.
Mm-hmm.
This is draft one. You know, you don't have to think too hard about this. But just, it's a wild thing to start thinking about, what do I want to be true of me?
It is when so I'm gone? Hard to do.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
But maybe try, pick one. This is a menu. Pick one. Don't do all of these things or else you'd be really weird.
Yeah.
Number three, meditate on your death. This is a weird thing that I do sometimes, but it's so good.
Mm.
I particularly maybe on a day of fasting, like during a prayer walk or during like I'll set a timer for 20 minutes of silence.
Mm.
This is really good on a day where you're fasting because you're already sort of like
there,
pared back. You're in like this restricted mentality. You're lacking. And I would just, honestly, it's a little bit morbid, but it's so healthy. I'll think about my moment of death. I'll be like, you know, where am I going to be? Like, hopefully on a bed in a house surrounded by family. Maybe not, but maybe there'll be a lot of pain. Maybe not.
Mm.
Maybe there'll be a lot of sadness. Maybe not. But what's it going to be like? What do I want to be true? Am I comfortable literally visualizing and imagining that my life will come to a terminal point? I won't say more. It's very individual. It's very thing. Yeah. Pray through it, you know?
Yeah.
Ask Jesus to help you through it. And then four would be just that reinvitation to make the age chart or go back to it. And if you already did it, write out the years, maybe this time till 80 and just think about, you know, prayerfully, you make it to then, maybe you make it to 90, maybe you don't, but just like sort of think there's a space on this chart that you're now going to write in and saying, oh, these are my years to give my death away.
Hmm.
This is that season. And the hard thing about this one is you don't know when it's going to be.
Nope.
So any one of those four ideas, I think will help you get started thinking about this so that when we come back next time, we can really think about, all right, how do we pass this on to our kids? What are we doing right now with young kids, adolescent kids, even grown-up kids? How are we doing that give your death away stuff where we're starting to pass on legacy to them, mentoring them, discipling them.
Well said. Until next time.
Signing off.